friends. My name is Vijaya Ingule, and to give a brief about me, I'm a practicing advocate at Bombay High Court, and I'm also visiting faculty at various colleges. I'll be taking you through to the legal aspects of business, what laws are involved. So we will begin with the chapter related to contract, the law of contract. But before we begin with that, let us understand what is law. When we talk of law, all we think about are the policemen who regulates traffics, our law and order in the society, the various rules and regulations, etc. But law is more than that and beyond that. It not only controls the human behavior at a certain given area, a particular setup, but it also controls a lot of give and take about the system, the economic system, etc. So as a management student, why is law important to you? It is important to you because you will be dealing into the mercantile or the commercial business aspect. You'll be dealing with people, business houses, consumers, you'll be giving services, etc. Apart from that, you will also be involved in the sales and marketing of your business. So what are the framework within which you are supposed to lay yourself is where law comes as a handy subject for you. And it is necessary for you to know what a law is. So let us begin with the most important requirement, that is a law of contract. Now, what is law of contract? Before that, let us take an overview of what is law. A law is a binding force on a person, on a society, on company, etc. It regulates, it is a subject of study, a rule of action, and there is a judicial remedy. Where there is a damage, there is a right, and where there is a right, there is a duty. What is the object? The object is simple: to keep everything in check, to keep everything in balances. If we are given an opportunity to use everything in our way, we will need go ahead and exploit things which will not be good for any social system. So let us move ahead and understand and have a brief introduction. Law is the main contributory factor for man's welfare and well-being. It keeps our behaviors and our actions in check. We know that any wrong that we commit or any wrong that has been committed on us, we have someone where we can go ahead and give our grievances, our grievances would be addressed. It keeps us in check because we know that if we do some mistake, whether in civil or criminal, commercial, there is someone who would address that, and it will put us in trouble in terms of the legal aspect. So the study of law is of enormous practical value. There is a maxim which says that every person need to know the law of his land. You cannot be saying that, no, I'm sorry, I did not know this law. It cannot be an excuse. You are residing in India, you are supposed to know what is the law of India. When you go abroad, even there, it is necessary for you to know certain basic laws which are working, which are have emphasis out there. As a businessman or as a management person, you would be confronted with various issues that will arise out of your contract, payments not being done. Today we are into e-commerce, a lot of online work is happening, phishing issues, copyright issues, etc. How do we deal with all that is what legal aspect is going to be all about. Now, there are various branches of law. Constitutional law, which is very important in terms of how the government is working, our fundamental rights, our duties. There is procedural courts, civil and criminal, which let us know what are the procedures to be followed in the court, how do we go ahead and file our complaints, how do we go ahead and defend ourselves? What are the time frames? There are international laws which are more so governed by the conventions and the treaties that two countries come together and sign. And then there is our business law, which comprises and regulates our trade business, our e-commerce, etc. Now, in the present era, the general law is applicable to every person. We have some which are personal laws, but they are very specific to the religious beliefs, marriage, testamentary, will, etc. But when it comes to business law, please remember, business law is something that is applicable to everyone throughout. It will not be the case that because I am a Hindu, Company Act is not applicable to me. Because I am a Muslim, Contract Act is not applicable to me. No. In business, the mercantile law, various kind of laws. Personal laws are based on your religion, on your customs, whereas your business laws, your mercantile laws are applicable to everyone. So laws can be divided into different parts, like even your procedural laws, they will not look at your religion and then go ahead and segregate you. Procedural laws will also be applicable generally to everyone. So this PPT will explain you the role of a man in the society. Here we are the man, and how the entire society or the mercantile business more so works. A man can be a promisee, he can be a service provider, a beneficiary, buyer, he can be a tenant, a landlord. Also, when you are working for a company, your company can also be a tenant or a landlord in that capacity. Now, what is the meaning of law? We have spoken so much about how, what are various aspects of law, the different kind of law. So what is the meaning of law? Law is a rule of action evolved to regulate social life and to avoid conflict of interest. It is recognized as commanding, influencing, or avoiding certain actions. It makes us believe that yes, these are the rules and regulations I am supposed to follow, and it keeps us within that frame. It is binding on us, it has a rule, action, and procedure, and what is not followed has a judicial remedy also. I have been wronged, maybe by way of contract, criminal breach, etc. I have my judicial system to go ahead and address my grievance too. Now, let us see what law means to various people. For a citizen, it is a rule which has to be followed, which has to be obeyed. For me, as a lawyer, it becomes my profession. For a legislator, it is something which is created by them. A lot of law, our acts, have been drafted by the legislation. For a judge, he is the one who goes ahead and decides the case on the basis of evidence given to him and the guiding principles of various judgments that have been brought forth. And for a social scientist, it is a mechanism of social control. Now, what is law? It is duty of the state to regulate the conduct of people by a set of rules. In turn, the people of the state to follow these rules directly or indirectly and implicitly or explicitly. Such rules of conduct, after its recognition by the state and enforced by it on people, are termed as law. Now, we have various philosophers and jurists who have gone ahead and attempted to define law. But please remember, defining law is, because law is really very vast, it has it can't be defined in few words. It has, these aspects are something which you need to understand and appreciate and follow. So let us see what different jurists have to say about law. Woodrow Wilson, according to him, law is that portion of the established habit and thought of mankind which has gained distinct and formal recognition in the shape of uniform rules backed by the authority and power of government. So if you can see, if we divide and try to analyze this definition, they have spoken a lot about how it is a uniform rule which is by the authority and the power of government. So what is important is the drafting of rules and the authority that they carry. If it does not have an authority and it is not backed by the government, then that law will not be law. According to Austin, a law is a rule of conduct imposed and enforced by sovereign. According to Oxford Dictionary, law is rule made by authority for the proper regulation of a community or society or for proper conduct of life. Now, this community and society is not necessary that it will be restricted to human beings. It is this society, this community today is also that of commerce and trade, your merchants, etc. So let us come to understand what is the object of law. As I have spoken earlier, I'll reiterate, the object of law is to create uniformity and social security amongst everyone, all categories, all communities of society, whether business class, whether general citizens, etc. It also helps to establish socio-economic justice and remove the imbalances. It's to create check and balances amongst the society. Law also helps to regulate and make a strong government. Even the government knows that this is what they, because of constitution, they will not go ahead and tread outside the limit and try to push our fundamental rights. That's how law helps in regulating and creating a balance everywhere. Now, what is the need of law? As said, that the scope of law, the object of law, is to create uniformity in the society. And as I had said earlier, the legal maxim, ignorance of law is no excuse. Ignorantia juris non excusit. You cannot have excuse saying that, oh, look here, I did not know this is the law. Sorry, you cannot. Irrespective whether you are literate or illiterate, whether you have come across in the business earlier or not, you are required to know the law of the land. This is equally important because you cannot go ahead and say, oh, I am someone new. Even if you have come from abroad, when you are coming here, you are supposed to know certain basic laws. When you are dealing, that is the reason why knowing the law. If a merchant comes here and says that, look here, I want to merge this company, I want to buy you out, that particular company who's come from abroad needs to know what are the regulations, what are the FDI regulations, FMR regulations, what does the company law speaks about merger and buying out and acquiring a company. They cannot go ahead and say that we are not your company, we are not from India, we do not know law. Everyone who is dealing in India needs to know the law of the land. Now, what is a commercial law? Commercial law is concerned with the matters which relates to business. It deals with the situation where a right and obligation is created out of a business transaction. For example, I am a consumer and some of you are the merchant or the service provider. When I take your service and pay you in consideration, we are entering into a relationship of a business. My right of getting a better service, your right of taking the money in exchange of the service given. Who would govern? The commercial law, the mercantile law goes ahead and governs it. Now, what is the scope of law? It includes law related to contract, sale of good, partnership, negotiable instrument act, the company, insurance, insolvency, winding up, etc., etc. So it's a very wide aspect. Now, what do we understand by a commercial law or a business law? Commercial law is a law which is concerned with the law of which governs commercial or business activity. Now, we deal into contractual situations where right and obligations are arising out of commerce. Earlier there were barter system, today we have monetary system where I take a service and give you money in exchange. What will happen when my service that I have been given, the service that I have been given is not up to the mark? Where do I go? I will go to the consumer court. If I have not paid you the money, you have to recover it. Where will you go? You will go to the city civil court to go, or high court, depending on the amount of recovery. And that's how you will address your grievance. If there is arbitration, you will go ahead and do arbitration as well. Now the scope is very, very large. As I have said that everything, everywhere that money is involved legally, betting, gambling, etc., money is involved, but it is not legal. It is illegal in India. When legal exchange of money is done for any services, buying or exchanging, etc., your money exchange, all these are commercial activities, and that's where commercial law comes into existence. In this module, what all are we going to learn? We will learn the law of contract, law of sale of goods, and there are other economic and legislation which comes under the general law. You have your Consumer Act, the SEBI regulations, FEMA, that is the Foreign Exchange Management, SIC Industrial Companies, your Patent Act, Trademark Act, Copyright Act, that which comes under the umbrella of the intellectual property rights. Now, what are the sources of business law? We've spoken a lot about law. This law is created like this, law is created like that. But from where did the law evolve? The very first law evolved was through customs. This is the custom. I go to you, you give me service, in exchange I will give you a crop. In my community, this is the system. That's how hundi has come into existence. Hundi is more of a customary manner. I have a running around account with you. As against my purchase orders, I issue invoices. You give, go on paying me part by part. I keep a running account of you. Like, this is the running account. This is how, okay, this is what Vijaya has paid. 5 lakh was due. She has paid 1 lakh. 4 lakh is due. Again, I go ahead and give something, and then again, that's the running account. So, if we have running account, that is our custom of dealing. Eventually, beyond customs came the judgments. What the judges did then, back then, was whenever there used to be dispute, they used to decide what it is. Hear everyone, what is the customary law? What ought to be done apart from the customary law? If the customary law is going beyond the social requirement, what can be done? If whether it is the custom is exploiting, then they came up with their principles of natural justice and various other principles which they gave in judgment, and these were guiding principles as well. So judicial decisions came in. During this time, the need arose as to there should be something written. Just customs, following customs, because there are so many various communities, customs cannot be followed in every way. We are expanding. Today we are global citizen. We cannot term ourselves just as Indian or from Bombay or from Delhi. That's a very micro level. But when we are doing business is at a global level, and we become a global citizen. So statutes, and who formed statutes? That is your acts, legislation. In India, that's your legislators go ahead and legislate. Your acts come into picture and they become your frame to act within. And then the common law, like in India, basically, we had our own customs. Then came Britishers, and then they started formulating and regulating. So a lot of customs of theirs is also used. And like, for example, your Contract Act, it's as far as 1888. So yes, so your Contract Act is a legislation drafted by the Britishers, and the same guiding principles have come here. Now, for English mercantile law, the law of merchant, common law, equity and statute law, that is the law drafted by the legislatures. For statute of Indian legislation, we have Indian Contract Act, Sale of Good Act, Partnership Act and Companies Act. Judicial decisions depend on the case laws. There are many interpretations which keep evolving. Like for example, the concept of damages, direct and indirect, back then were different and today they may be different. So how one interprets, what are the guiding principles, etc., are given in the case law and then the custom usage. Now let us begin with the concept of business law in India. We have spoken a lot. The reason I have not dealt with the singularly with each and every slides is because we have done that. It's in detail. Like when I'm talking about judgments, the judgments will give you ratio and principles that look here, this is what, how you need to interpret damages. This is how you will interpret the consequential damage, the direct damage, the indirect damage, etc. Now, Indian Company Act. Earlier, Companies Act was governed by the 1956 legislation, and today we have the new legislation, which is the 2013 legislation. Indian Companies Act 1956 has gone and now it's 2013. It goes ahead and discusses about how a company should function, what are the compliances the company should do, how can the merger acquisition happen, what is the role of a majority and minor shareholder. If the minor shareholder's rights are not protected, what are the options available to them? Now, Companies Act 2013 is divided into 29 chapters and 470 clauses. Okay, and this bill provides for class action suit. It also provides new concept as single person company where there is only one director. Then the cap on the number of persons who can be in private company has been raised from 11 to 200, and there is e-voting which has now been recognized, because earlier e-voting was not a concept which was brought in. Now it is the e-voting which has been recognized by 2013 legislation. Now the concept of business law, because of the open market system post 1990s, Indian economy has boomed. Customers have been exposed to various services, different products, and the GDP has been growing thereafter. We have been having our economic up and downs, not that it's not been, but for example, earlier telephones, we had to book telephones and telephones used to come like after months and months together. Today each and everyone, even people living in slums, have mobile phones. So that's how things have changed, and the business for you has increased because your consumer base has increased, your business has increased. You know that today it's not just the rich class that you want to target. There are various, one company has various products, one for lower middle class, one for upper middle class, one for the rich class. What is law of contract? With that, let us begin with law. What is contract? The Indian Contract Act defines what is contract. There has to be a proposal. When there is a proposal, there has to be an acceptance. There has to be an agreement on that acceptance. And the acceptance of that agreement becomes a final binding contract. When this contract is accepted, signed, it becomes a binding contract on you. Now, before I begin with the law of contract, let me reiterate here. When you are entering into a contract, Contract Act is basically a guiding legislation. It will let you know the terms and conditions would be yours, but you have to make sure that the terms and conditions that you are entering do not go against the principle laid under the law of contract. For example, law of contract says there has to be a consideration which has to pass in contract, or you cannot go ahead and do anything that is against public policy. So entering into a contract for betting, gambling, they are against public policy in India. So you, the minute your contract is for betting and gambling, it becomes void. This will not be a legal contract. So that is what your guiding principles are. So when you're drafting, the terms and conditions can be decided, but what you have to make sure is that your terms and conditions that you are deciding are in sync with the principle emphasized under the Act. The law of contract is also one of the oldest branches. Okay, it has governed contract and dealings as to how the money is exchanged. What are the rights of a promisor? What is the right of a promisee? When the contract can be revoked? What happens when a new clause is entered into? And what happens when the entire contract changes its form because of the new clause entered? That is novation of the contract. A new contract is happening. Now, what is a contract? A proposal, when accepted, becomes a promise. Agreement is an acceptance of an offer. So what we understand is there has to be a proposal, and that proposal needs to be accepted. So there is a promisor and a promisee. So promisor is the one who is promising to the promisee. Okay, and there is exchange of a consideration. Section 2H of the Indian Contract Act defines contract as an agreement enforceable by law is contract. Now, what are the essential agreement, essential ingredient of the definition? It is, there has to be an agreement and there has to be a legal binding force on that agreement. Okay, and what is agreement? Agreement is offer and acceptance. So contract equals to agreement, that is offer and acceptance, plus a legal obligation. Now again, please remember here, all contracts are agreements, but all agreements cannot be titled as contract. There has to be something more, like consideration. I have agreed, but there is no consideration going on with that. It may not be contract. Now, to make all the agreements contracts, what are the necessary ingredients? Section 10 speaks about what are the essential requirement of a valid contract. There has to be a legal binding force, a legal obligation. There have to be two parties. Let us start with this. There has to be two parties, a promisor and a promisee. There should be an offer from the promisor and there should be an acceptance from the promisee. There should be a legal binding force on that, and there should be a lawful consideration. Okay. Now, very important is the capacity of the parties. Why and what? A minor cannot enter into agreement. If you are entering a contract with the minor, it has to be with the guardian, and that minor, once he attains majority, can refuse to go ahead with the contract. You can't go ahead and enter in a contract with person who are mentally incapacitated, or who is under influence of alcohol, or is not able to take a decision at the time of signing contract. Then that will become an illegal contract. That will not be taken. There has to be a free consent. When I say free consent, I mean to say there should not be undue influence. Like, for example, I am an employee and you are my employer, and you say, look here, Vijaya, we want to give you 200% increment, which is not possible in the given scenario. 10% increment is also a big thing. But I will give you 200% increment, but this is what you have to do. If you do not do, then I will have you removed. This is influencing. This is undue influence, coercion. This will not be a free consent. It has to be a free consent. I should not be under any kind of pressure. There should, if there is a fiduciary relationship, it should be true and honest. It shouldn't happen that because my father is saying and he's forcing me, I get influenced by him and that's why I am sighing. It should not be under undue influence. It should again not be under any coercion. It should not be forced on me. There should not be any fraud played upon me. I am shown one object, but I am given some other object. The fourth one is, there should not be any mistake. For example, let us assume there was a case law where I was supposed to send a pen to Mr. Kundi at a particular street. Now it so happened that there were two Mr. Kundis on that particular street, and instead of going to the Kundi that I wanted to send, it went to some other Mr. Kundi. I can go ahead and call that back. I do not have a contract with that person. I have a contract with the Mr. Kundi at the first shop of that particular street. So there should not be any mistake and there should not be any misrepresentation. So please remember, for a free consent, there are five important things. There should not be any undue influence, no misrepresentation, no mistake, no fraud, no coercion. If these five, either of the five aspects are there in the consent, then it will not be considered as free consent. Then lawful object, the object that you are entering for the contract. For example, if you are entering into gambling any something which is not legal in India, then in that case it is not lawful and it will not be allowed. That contract shall be void. Thereafter, it should not be declared as void in the meaning of free consent. Please remember, under capacity of contract, if a minor can go ahead and give an assent later once he goes ahead and attains majority. For mistake, misrepresentation, again, it's a voidable contract at the option of the promisee. It is, okay, okay, it has gone by mistake to this person, you pay it to me, I'll send him the other one. It's voidable. I can go ahead and cancel it. It's on my option. But fraud, coercion, undue influences are the factors which cannot be, is not voidable. It is not my option that I will exercise. In the eyes, it is absolutely void. Void means which has no existence, which cannot be considered as executed.